Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Marissa Zappieri Caruana. She is a board member of the Lupus Foundation of America, as well as a patient. Marissa will be sharing stories of men and women across the nation who managed to deal with the hurdles of life battling this debilitating and cruel disease. She is also the author of the newly released book, Lupus Real Life Patients Talks. Good morning, Marissa. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Fantastic. It is great to have you on the air with me. I have to tell you, Lupus Real Life Patients Talk is very insightful. The stories are very compelling. It is a definite must-read for lupus patients themselves, as well as people who are interested in learning more about the disease. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Sure. Okay, well, I can start off by telling you I had a fairly simple childhood. I grew up in a very loving, occasionally loud Italian family. I was raised by my single mother, and also I spent a lot of time with my grandparents growing up. You know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, but there was definitely a lot of love in my family. I remember having an enjoyable childhood, except for the fact that I got sick very often. Mm-hmm. My mother, she wasn't able to afford health insurance, and I just remember the frustration felt by me, her, and even my family doctor, because there was only so much that they could test me for that was in my mother's budget. And lupus wasn't commonly tested for back then. So I pretty much entered into my teen and adult years just pushing through the fact that I was sick all the time and not really knowing what was wrong with me. During college, I attended school full-time, and I worked two jobs, and that eventually took its toll on my body, but I kept pushing on. I've always been the type of person to not give up, and I think, you know, it's important to finish whatever you start, no matter how long that takes. It wasn't actually until the lupus diagnosis that everything made sense for me, and the diagnosis and how it came about just radically altered my life, and it put me on the road to where I am now.
Very interesting. What is lupus?
Okay, so lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease. It causes inflammation to various parts of the body. That can be skin, your heart, lungs, kidneys, brain, and blood. And basically with lupus, the immune system loses its ability to tell the difference between a foreign substance in the body and the body's own cells and tissues. So the immune system starts to make antibodies that are directed against itself and its organs.
Who gets lupus, and how many people have it?
That's a great question. Men, women, and children get lupus. It's estimated that about 1.5 to 2 million people in the United States currently have it, and 5 million worldwide. And I just also want to let your listeners know that, you know, it's more common in African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, and Asians than it is in Caucasians. And the numbers that I just mentioned, 90% of those patients are women, and most will develop the disease between their childbearing years, 15 to 44 years of age.
That's interesting, though. And the other thing about lupus is that it is hereditary, right? And it's not something that's contagious that you can catch from somebody else.
Right. It is not contagious. They do believe that genetics does play a part in it, but it's not, you know, every single case that someone that has lupus that, you know, has a child, that child will always get the disease.
So it's pretty much in your system, but it will not maybe show up to much later in life, or then again, it may never even show up at all.
Correct. And if just from the interviews that I did with these patients and from myself and meeting people through the years, it seems, you know, and also from what I read, it usually needs some type of trigger to come out. It can be environmental. It can be, you know, a bad illness, just something that would bring your body to a weakened state.
Did they find out what causes it in terms of, like, when you talk about hereditary, and you did mention about African-American, Asians, and Native Americans and so forth being much more highly susceptible to this disease, is there any particular thing that scientists have found out about certain genes sequence?
I think that that's at the point where we're at in terms of research right now. There was such a lag in time as far as doing any research on the disease. I can tell you that, you know, over the last decade, there has been so much more focus on the disease and what specific genes are involved that I wouldn't be surprised if sometime in the next decade we finally have those answers.
Very interesting. Are there obvious symptoms for the disease?
There are. Well, there's a lot of actually common symptoms, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Not everyone experiences the same symptoms, and the difficult part with lupus is that so many of the symptoms mimic a number of other diseases, so it can be difficult to diagnose. The most common symptoms I could tell you about are joint pain, fevers that can last from days to weeks, skin rashes, overwhelming fatigue, sensitivity to the sun, to the heat, mouth and nose sores are common, and also difficulty breathing.
One of the things I read in your book was MCTD, mixed connective tissue disease, and that's fairly close to lupus, but it's not.
Right. That's sometimes you'll hear from lupus patients that they overlap. So, you know, MCTD is something that's similar, and some lupus patients will, you know, maybe be diagnosed with Raynaud's or Sjögren's. These are other autoimmune type diseases, and maybe later on be diagnosed with lupus. So there are these overlapping issues that do happen with some patients.
The other thing I found out is that it's something that triggers something else. It's a chain reaction, like you mentioned, because it needs something to trigger it. And then it itself, lupus itself, triggers a bunch of different things in your body that may actually, in the end, kill you, but not necessarily lupus itself. If I'm thinking correctly, in other words, you know, it may cause you to have organ failures.
Correct. Well, what happens is the body eventually, you know, turns on itself. It begins to make these antibodies and it directs it at its own organs. So over time, those organs begin to fail. With lupus, you know, it tends to be the kidneys. A lot of lupus patients might, you know, have some type of kidney failure, eventually might need a transplant. It could be their heart or their lungs. So, yes, you're correct on that.
What are the treatments associated with this disease?
Well, there aren't too many treatment options currently. For many years, physicians have been using high-dose steroids, chemotherapy, also anti-malarial medication. These are used to control and suppress the immune system. Last year, there was Benlysta that was released on the market, and this is actually the first medication that was ever formulated for lupus. Took over 50 years. We finally had a medication specifically designed for lupus patients. So we're hoping with the release of Benlysta, you know, that road is being paved now for additional medications to be formulated. And I know of several that are right now undergoing FDA approval, seeking FDA approval at this time specifically for lupus.
You mentioned earlier, if I'm not mistaken, you said there's no cure for lupus, correct? But you can contain it pretty much.
Right. There is no cure for lupus. Many cases can be controlled with medication, but there are cases that are fatal.
How did you find out about your own diagnosis? I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but tell us in detail because it's quite an interesting story.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, it was obvious to me and my family that there was something not right with my health since the time I was very young. My lupus diagnosis actually happened very suddenly, which is not common. I've heard, you know, many times over the years that average diagnosis can take from 1 to 2 years. But for me, it all came about after I was involved in a traumatic accident, which involved me actually getting run over by a pickup truck as a pedestrian by someone who was under the influence at the time. The accident was so severe, and it brought my body to such a weakened state that it basically was just the perfect environment for whatever was already going on to come out. after the accident, I found out I'd had a head injury. I had had a fractured pelvis. I also had fractured ribs, which lacerated my liver, and that led to internal bleeding. So I spent a long time in a trauma hospital in South Florida, and eventually I was transferred to a regular hospital room, and then I went to a rehab so I can learn how to walk again with assistance. And I'd say about 3 months into the recovery from that accident, I began to get strange fevers that would last for just for so long. Nothing would make them break. I had a rash that broke out on the majority of my body. My hands would turn purple. The sun, the heat, they were bothering me. And I wound up having a small stroke ultimately. So because I had so many symptoms of lupus at once, and I was directed to a rheumatologist who was excellent at diagnosing autoimmune diseases, I received my diagnosis within 2 weeks. So, you know, that was a defining moment for me in life. I can still remember where I was, what time of day it was, who was around me. And I can tell you, in one sense, I had, you know, so much relief because there was finally a label, so to speak, that explained everything I've been going through for so long. But at the same time, I was crushed that, you know, I was diagnosed with this disease. And, you know, I was still trying to recover from an accident that was so traumatic by itself. And then to be dealt with a blow of a diagnosis, it just took a lot out of me at that time.
Very interesting story. So why did you decide to write Lupus Real Life Patients Talk?
Well, I wrote the book for every lupus patient, for those that I've encountered through the years and those that I haven't, and for their caretakers, their friends, their spouse, their parents. You know, when I was diagnosed, which was almost 13 years ago, it wasn't easy to find someone to talk to about lupus, except for my doctor. Not a lot of people knew about the disease. There was not a lot of awareness in the public. When I would meet someone who had, you know, even heard of it, which was very rare, a common response that I was met with was, I knew someone, but they passed away. It made me feel so frightened and alone at the time. I was lucky enough, though, to meet a young woman my age who had lupus since she was very young. Her name's Jiwa, and honestly, her coming into my life was a godsend. It, you know, in terms of the book, I wanted any lupus patient who could, you know, pick it up, feel as though they had a best friend speaking directly to them who could understand everything they were going through and also offer helpful, loving advice. And you know, bottom line, I wrote that book so that every lupus patient out there knows that they're not alone in what they're going through.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job with that. I really like the book, and it really connects with me when I read it, because I had mentioned to you before the show starts that I had a friend, a very good friend, as a matter of fact, who actually introduced me to ballroom dancing some 14, 15 years ago, and she had lupus. She passed on, I would say, about 4 or 5 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So how did you select the various individuals for the interview?
I actually pulled from my past journalism experiences. I work as a writer. I began researching, and I put queries out across the globe to interview people that had lupus and to even interview those who, you know, maybe were related to someone that had lupus or were married to someone that had lupus. And then from the responses that I received, I chose people from different ages, races, religious beliefs, occupations, and also people who experienced different symptoms of the disease, because I just wanted to have such a wide variety of people in the book that no matter which lupus patient picked it up, there was going to be someone in that book that they could relate to.
Well, you did a fantastic job with that. And I have selected several compelling stories as talking points for this morning. So can you please give us a short rundown of these stories as I mentioned them to you?
Sure.
Well, we're going to start with chapter 4, the story of Wendy Phillips.
Okay. Wendy, she was such a wonderful interview, and she was actually also a friend of mine from South Florida that I met through the Lupus Foundation of America. You know, her story jumped out at me during the interview process because she's encountered so much, and she's young. She's only in her 30s, And she's not only handled it all so well, but she's thrived like no one I've ever met before. She was actually diagnosed with lupus after dealing with cancer in her 20s. She eventually became wheelchair-bound, and she just had so much time taken from her because of her illness. And, you know, she made the decision to just take her life back. Her story is really a testimony that with encouragement and a never-give-up attitude, faith, having a loving support system around you, that, you know, you can take your life back after being diagnosed with a horrible illness. And actually today I can tell you she's a marathon runner. I believe she is signed up for 4 marathons this year. She has a daughter and a loving partner, and she's actually currently working on her PhD. She's just an incredible person.
And that's the reason why I selected her story to kick off this conversation, because here's someone that just looked at life differently and said, okay, look, this is what I have. I'm accepting it, but I don't have to just let it weigh me down. And I'm going to manage my lifestyle a little bit different and yet triumphed over certain limitations, and I just work around it. And you're right. The fact that she had bounced off cancer and then now she's working with lupus and she's running, she's obviously fit. And here's someone that actually, I think most lupus patients, the prolonged delayed diagnosis may even put you in a wheelchair. And so obviously she had been in that predicament, and yet today she's running marathons.
Right. It's incredible. Just to, you know, read her story, she really goes into detail. Just Wendy is a huge Disney fan. You'll learn that about in her story. And, you know, I think the defining moment for her was having to be pushed around Disney in a wheelchair and not being able to enjoy it. I mean, this is a place that she loves to go, makes her feel free and like a kid and have a great time. And she was stuck in a wheelchair. And she just finally said, you know, I can't do this anymore. Like, I have to make a change. There's got to be something I can do. Mm-hmm. And today she's a marathon runner.
Fabulous. Chapter 6, the story of Kathleen Walker.
All right. Kathleen Walker is someone I met through the interview process, another incredible woman. I added her story. I thought it was so important to have it in the book because it showed a common case of being undiagnosed for a long period of time and the struggle that you have to endure while you're waiting for, you know, a doctor to find out what's wrong with you. Why do you feel like this? Why is your life suddenly just, you know, come to a complete stop? I believe that Kathleen was sick for almost 2 years before she had her lupus diagnosis, and she wasn't diagnosed until she had pericarditis, which is inflammation of the pericardium, which is like a sac that covers the heart. This does occur in some lupus patients. And it actually helped her rheumatologist make the final diagnosis. And I wanted to also share the advice that she had for lupus patients, in which she stressed, you know, resting and listening to your body and just becoming more aware of what your body is trying to tell you. And also learning how to say no to certain things in life so that, you know, you have more time to enjoy the good days, as, you know, that you get as a lupus patient. Because I can tell you, and I think most lupus patients will be able to tell you, that you'll have some great days, and then you might have some horrible weeks or, you know, even horrible months. I've had horrible years. So to really enjoy the time that you feel good, which, you know, a lot of us, it's difficult for us to say no to people, but sometimes you have to do that, and that's what her story stresses.
I chose her story because the fact that she was not really, I guess, diagnosed in this case till she's in the 50s.
Right.
When we talk about a lot of people, they tend to know about lupus in the early 20s or even much younger than that. In her case, here's someone who have lived her life and, I guess, basically trying to enjoy her life in the 50s, and all of a sudden you are coming down with this tragic disease, so to speak, and yet she's able to overcome it with strength and, like you say, just changing her lifestyle a little bit and accommodate it and move forward.
Exactly. And I think there's, you know, I have a few women and men in there that were older, you know, and just in a different season of life when a diagnosis came about. But like you're saying, most of the people that I interviewed were younger. So this gives a great perspective of someone who, you know, had the opportunity to do a lot of things in life, was healthy, and then maybe getting ready to not retire as of yet, but getting to that point, and all of a sudden now having to deal with the fact that, you know, she's sick.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 7, the story of Lori Renfro, is very touching. So tell us about that.
Sure. Lori was someone that I met through my queries online. I've actually never met her in person. But she has a remarkable story that I felt was so important to put into the book because she was actually diagnosed with the illness at the age of 9. So I think it's important to also note that when Lori was diagnosed, not much was known about lupus. This was a while ago. I believe she's in her 40s, maybe early 50s now. It wasn't really spoken about. It wasn't publicized anywhere. There weren't a lot of organizations. And she wasn't diagnosed until the lupus was so severe that it actually put her into a coma. So in the book, you'll find her story of courage, just essentially, you know, having your entire life change at the age of 9. And I love Lori's advice of not owning your illness and not basing your life or restructuring your entire life around the illness. And, you know, she also talks about taking responsibility for your health, which I am a strong supporter of. And, you know, her story is also one of a lupus patient that goes into kidney failure, which is, you know, very common with the disease. And she ultimately had to have a kidney transplant. So, because there are so many lupus patients that have had a kidney transplant or are waiting to receive one or currently on dialysis, you know, I thought Lori's story was one that they could definitely relate to.
Very true. And she obviously lived a very productive life. She's very active right now. Like you say, she's the master of her faith in the sense that she does whatever she wants.
Absolutely. She has, you know, even though she was diagnosed at 9 years old, and, you know, she does tell you for a long time things were very difficult. And, you know, having the kidney failure, obviously that was, I'm not exactly sure how long that started until she had her transplant. But, you know, once the transplant had taken place and medicines, you know, have slowly improved and there have been some new options through the years. I mean, she's led a pretty full life.
Mm-hmm. That brings us to chapter 8, which is very interesting. And I'm really glad that you put in the perspective from a mother's point of view. Let's talk about that.
Sure. It's funny. I had the patients' interviews, and I just felt like something was missing. So I decided to put these perspective highlight chapters in, and these were all going to be from people that didn't have lupus but cared for someone that did. So this was from my mother, and I actually asked my mom to write this perspective highlight because I had met so many other parents over the years who were taking care of, you know, a child that had lupus. And they all expressed to me in some way that they wish they could find another parent to talk to about it who could understand, you know, what it's like to watch your child be sick and to have to go through this whole diagnosis process and then, you know, the aftermath. I also thought it would be helpful, you know, for my mom in terms of getting her thoughts on paper and being able to, you know, maybe put some of the difficult times with the disease behind her. My mom is just, she's such an incredible person. She's so caring and compassionate and loving. I am honestly so blessed to have her in my life. And I don't know what I would have done, you know, during some of the flare-ups and just the emotionally difficult times of the disease if she wasn't there. In the beginning of her story, I love her statement. She says, "Be assured and aware that lupus will test your endurance, provoke your patience, mock your intelligence, and vex your spirit." She also talks about how having a chronic illness is difficult to deal with emotionally, and not just for the patient, but also, you know, from the caregiver aspect, which is huge because, you know, most people that have lupus either have a parent or a spouse or a friend, someone that's helping them. Her advice in that chapter you know, for anyone that has, any parent that has a child with the disease, is to be there for them physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and to be their advocate or, you know, their coach and their cheerleader. And she also goes into the whole, into her faith in that chapter, which not necessarily, you know, does someone have to be of the same faith, but I just think that they can relate that, you know, trying to do it all on your own can be difficult. And mm-hmm. having faith there can just be so helpful when, you know, you're dealing with something like a chronic illness.
You hit it on the nose because it is finding strength. This is the interesting part. I mean, when I speak and I tell people this and they laugh, and of course it is a laughing matter, and it's not a laughing matter. Your parents, your mom will always love you more than you love them. Coming from the perspective from a parent, it's devastating to have your child to go through knowing that your child has this disease for the rest of her life. And here, like, the initial thing is that, uh-oh, you know, I did something. It's got to
right.
be me. And so you go through the whole process. And I really like the fact that you have your mom coming on, talking about her feelings, her thoughts. How do I cope up with that? Because it's one thing that you have to cope up with the disease yourself. And now from a parent's perspective, a caregiver, not necessarily a professional caregiver, but someone that's, I mean, you're talking about blood, whether it's adopted. I mean, you're talking about as close as you can get. And how does that affect you mentally?
Exactly.
And yeah. So I'm glad you did that.
Yes. It can be, you know, really tough on caregivers, whether or not, you know, they're related to you. And
mm-hmm.
you just sparked something that I remember my mom said to me, you know, shortly after I was diagnosed. She said she remembers holding me as a baby and looking at me and thinking that I was so perfect. To her, I was so perfect. And she had no idea that, you know, maybe genetically there was something that was off, you know. And she
yeah.
did. She questioned that one time, you know, did she do something? Like, what happened that I have this? So I just
yep.
think it was important to put, you know, a parent's perspective in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you did. The next story is Chapter 11, Story of P.J. Nunn.
Okay. P.J. is another incredible woman who I had the honor of interviewing. And I actually put her in the story for several reasons. First, she was another person that could tell a story of being misdiagnosed or undiagnosed for a long period of time, because this happens so often. I believe she was told for over a year, even after being hospitalized 7 out of 12 months, that, you know, it was stress, or you have bronchitis, you have sinus infection, let me give you some antibiotics, and just being sent on her way and just getting worse and worse. And, you know, I get so frustrated when I hear these stories, and, you know, this is why it's so important to get a second opinion if you're still not feeling well, or you feel like maybe, you know, you were dismissed or just not taken seriously by a doctor. You know, and she even stresses, even if you have to get a third or fourth opinion, if that's what it takes, because, you know, sometimes, like I mentioned before, it can take years. It can take seeing different doctors until you get a right diagnosis. Another important aspect of her story revolves around losing everything in terms of, you know, your home, your finances, your job, your family, and then having to pick up the pieces, you know, to rebuild your life. So many people lose so much of their life because they're diagnosed with an illness that either, you know, prevents them from working, puts them in the hospital for a long period of time, impedes their ability to maybe earn income. And just, it's also something that, you know, takes its toll on relationships and marriages and family life. But PJ is completely transparent in her story. She talks about all these different aspects, and her story really shows that, you know, if someone has strength and determination, those things can make all the difference when it comes to, you know, rebuilding your life.
Very true. I chose the story because there are several elements there which is tremendous to talk about. Number one, obviously, finding strength within oneself to move forward, and then the fact that she's also a mother and wife. Amidst all this frustration about being misdiagnosed over the years, then she has to play the role. I mean, when I say here play, I say this respectfully in terms of as a wife and then as a mother. And then amidst all that family fiasco that she had to go through, yet she makes it through because of personal strength. And I think that story will resonate with a lot of people, where in the sense that whether, in this case, whether you have lupus or not, when you come to a challenge in your life, don't give up, because there's always an opportunity to move and change direction in some ways and make adjustments and move forward.
Absolutely.
Do you learn anything about the people that you talk to? Are there any special things that you've learned from them that you don't already know about lupus?
I actually learned so much through this. It was such an amazing experience, not only to find, you know, the people I was going to interview mm-hmm. and then read through their stories, but then to actually go in and write the entire book. The first thing that actually stuck out to me while interviewing all the men and women was every lupus patient I encounter is really a tough cookie. They are, you know, such go-getters. They're so motivated. I think I'd categorize most of them as type A, and mm-hmm. they don't let much stop them. So I think that it's that quality within us that helps us get through living every day with this disease. I also learned that, like myself, most people with the disease lean on their faith to get through the difficult times. In addition, when I was reading and writing everyone's personal story, it just reaffirmed for me that I wasn't alone. There's so many other people out there who are experiencing the same thing on a daily basis. And, you know, taking some of their advice helped me as well. Things like, you know, I mentioned earlier, learning how to say no and when to say yes. And also being willing, you know, to educate others about the disease and learning how to not take it personally if someone isn't compassionate, you know, or just really doesn't understand what you're going through, because, you know, maybe on the outside you don't really look that sick. That happens a lot. It also helped me see that, you know, people don't want to give up. Most people will fight for what they want, and they will struggle through the difficult times because, you know, they have the faith that something better is going to be there at the end of that difficult season.
That's very true. In reading your book, the biggest thing that I got out of it, of course, is the support group, the strength that the patients receive from the support group as well as from themselves. But the other thing, which is actually, to me, is very serious in the sense that the frustration of the prolonged misdiagnosis that happened over and over and over again simply because there were so many other symptoms that affects the true diagnosis. Let's talk about that a little bit. I think in just about every one of the people that you mentioned in the book, they go through this roller coaster of not knowing, and then it's a big relief in finding out what it finally is so that you can be treated for it.
Right, and I can tell you, you know, obviously there were years, for me personally, I was sick, mm-hmm. and we just didn't have the money to find out, you know, what was wrong, and lupus really wasn't tested for very often back then, but it's so taxing on the mind, it's so draining to know that you don't feel right. You know your body. You know for a long period of time how you felt, and now suddenly things have changed, and you don't know what caused it, and you're not getting any straight answers. And, you know, to put it like this, but you almost feel like you're going crazy when a doctor doesn't take you seriously, or they're dismissing you, or they're sending you on your way, you know, with more medication, maybe an antibiotic, and that's not what is wrong with you. You know, you start to question yourself and say, is this all in my mind? You know, maybe there is nothing wrong with me. You know, it's a horrible feeling because you want to be taken seriously. You know that something is not working properly in your body. So to have that final diagnosis, to have a name to it, it is a relief because now you can finally say, this is what I have. What am I going to do now? How am I going to take care of this? What medication can I take? What can I do, you know, maybe on an alternative medication basis? And you can start to make a plan. You're not left like in that, just that time or that area of just being in limbo anymore.
The other thing also, you talk about medication several times, and that's something that medication can be good as well as bad for you because they have side effects. Let's talk about that as well.
Right. Well, you know, long-term steroid use can have some pretty detrimental side effects. Chemotherapy is commonly used in lupus, and, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of the side effects that can have. Personally, I have had side effects. I was on a medication called Plaquenil for 9 years, which is an antimalarial. It worked wonderful in the first few years, and then I began to have horrible side effects from it, and I can no longer take that medication. And, you know, so I did well for a very long time on steroids. But then when I had a severe flare-up at the beginning of this year, I had no choice but to actually go on a short stint of chemotherapy. And I can tell you the side effects from that made me feel worse than the lupus has ever made me feel. And the lupus has made me feel pretty horrible. I didn't think it could get worse. But, you know, so then you're dealing with the medications on top of already feeling, you know, pretty terrible. So over the years, I've always been interested in food and nutrition and supplementation. And I've seen many nutritionists. I've researched and read a lot, and, you know, I take a lot of steps now as far as alternative medicine that they help. It helps me get through just, you know, everyday annoyances of lupus. And I do it mostly, you know, with natural things.
Mm-hmm. How has your personal journey been like in terms of the ups and downs over the years?
Oh, that's it's been a long journey. There's times that it's been so difficult, but I can tell you it's taught me so much about myself. You know, regarding, like, the physical aspect of lupus, it's been hard on my body. I've had a couple of small strokes. I've had some heart issues, issues with my blood. And then, you know, like I was mentioning, the daily annoyances, I call them fevers and rashes and sores, this unrelenting fatigue that doesn't go away. I can't go in the sun, you know, which ultimately was my deciding factor for leaving Florida and coming back up to New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you have the spiritual, emotional, and psychological aspect. But the disease, you know, having the disease has helped me grow so much as a person in those areas because it's forced me to be introspective and to have courage in myself and to have faith, you know. Having a major event, you know, such as diagnosing someone with lupus, or for me, even the truck accident and then also being diagnosed, actually helped me take better control of my life. I knew after speaking with a trauma surgeon after the accident, you know, that most pedestrians don't even make it to the hospital alive. And then when I add in the mini strokes and a blood clot and a brain aneurysm, I know that there's multiple times that I could have died. So... Mm-hmm. I think facing death at a young age or multiple times really puts your life into perspective very fast. You realize what's important, who you want to surround yourself with, and you're also faced with the reality of death. And, you know, you have to decide, you know, what do you believe in is going to happen to you when you die. You also learn how to enjoy your life more. So dealing with these major life events helped me realize I have two choices. I could either let it destroy my life and ruin me and let it wipe away any goals or dreams that I had, or I could make a change for the better and I could rework my goals and dreams and I could educate myself on how to get as healthy as possible in terms of, you know, maybe alternative medication and therapies. And I could dig deeper into my faith and my relationship with God, and I can also, you know, start the process of educating others who have a disease or who had just been diagnosed or who just love someone that has lupus.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel like I'm a better, stronger, and more compassionate person for having gone through everything over the last 13 years with, you know, the accident and the disease.
One of the things that I got from reading your story in the book, which I thought was very interesting, you obviously mentioned yourself that you are a type A personality, which I mentioned earlier. A lot of people with a type A personality, it seems to help to overcome things. But I would think, on the other hand, being a type A and having to adjust yourself, it's a tremendous, what I would say, letting some air out of your sail in a way, because being diagnosed and sort of having to adjust yourself. That's one aspect of it. And then, of course, the other story that I thought was very interesting, and I'm glad you put it in the book, it's a story about your experience with your dentist, about having him telling you not to come back and go somewhere else. I thought that was very interesting, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes, Well, I'll touch on both of those really quickly. As far as, you know, being type A and then all of a sudden just having your life just stopped. And it's very hard to change, you know. It takes time. So there was a very long time, I'd say a few years after my lupus diagnosis, I just kept going. I kept going and went back to school. I wanted to finish nursing school. And, you know, nothing was going to stop me. But, you know, I just didn't take into consideration that my life has changed at that point, and I just thought I could go back to the way I was. and, you know, it wound up getting me even worse and even, you know, more sick. So there was a point when I just had to say, okay, I have to make some adjustments here, and I have to learn how to stop and, you know, rest, even though I don't want to, because there's so many things I want to do. You know, and that's where journaling really came into handy, because when I realized, you know, different patterns that I naturally had and how they would affect me health-wise, I had to adjust things. And now I know, you know, there's certain days that I have to just take the day for myself and I have to rest. And then I can, you know, recharge my batteries and go back to do the things I want to do. But you're right, having a type A personality and having something that, you know, stops you in your tracks sometimes, it can be very difficult to learn how to, you know, just have both of those in your life at the same time. And, you know, as far as my dentist, the story about that, I thought that was important to put that in there. You know, for your listeners right now that are unfamiliar with the story, but lupus can cause some really severe mouth sores and even in your nose. They're very painful and they're not attractive, and, you know, it just made me feel ashamed, you know, and I had to go and have dental work, and this person just made me feel terrible, and I just remember him asking me, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, have you been tested for AIDS? And he said it, you know, with several other people around, and I was not only like mortified, but, you know, I was trying to explain to him, no, I have lupus. Like, this is a common occurrence with lupus, and he was so scared to even touch me. You know, he did. He asked me to actually leave. So that was just like another defining moment that people are not aware of this disease. And, you know, as a dentist, I was hoping he would be more aware. But this is why education and awareness is just so important.
Very true. From fear, let's go to love. In chapter 22, you talk about a husband's perspective in terms of how he deals with a person with lupus. And this is good because we talk about support group.
Right. Well, my husband, who is amazing, was kind enough to give me his take on being married to someone who has a chronic illness. And I'm so thankful that, you know, he was willing to do this, because I really felt that was important to have in the book. You know, he's honest about the questions that he received when he told people that we were getting married. You know, everyone was worried, you know, oh, why are you going to marry someone that's sick? You know, someone that may not be able to have children, may not be able to work. All these questions, you know, he answered them telling them, you know, marrying someone that's so-called healthy doesn't mean that that person's not going to face some type of health crisis in the future. You know, he compares loving and living with someone who has lupus to driving in a torrential, like, downpour. And you know that there's going to be sharp turns and maybe some sudden stops and maybe some, you know, potholes in the road ahead of you, but if you go into the relationship aware of these things and, you know, you just prepare yourself beforehand as best as you can. I love the parts of his story where, you know, he shares the miracles that we've experienced together over the years. Things like, you know, the brain aneurysm or me being in the wheelchair for almost a year and then being able to finally pack it up and we've never had to unpack it again. It's just nice to hear another perspective because, you know, as lupus patients, I think, you know, sometimes we forget these little things and they stand out so much to other people because we're so bogged down with having to deal with it every single day. He says in the closing of his chapter that, you know, he believes his role in all of this is to remind me every day, even multiple times, that the prison of lupus has many escapes. So to have an encouraging spouse is just such a relief. And, you know, to have someone who will be there and just walk on this journey with you and be strong when you can't be strong, to be compassionate and to be faithful when you just want to throw in the towel, I really think those things make all the difference to someone who's chronically ill. You know, my wish and hope for every lupus patient is that they can find someone that's caring and wonderful and loving to them.
I agree. There's nothing better or serve as the greatest panacea than unconditional love.
Absolutely.
What would you like for your readers to gain from reading the book?
You know, I really want readers, regardless of whether or not they have lupus or if they're a caregiver, I just want them to know that they're not alone. Lupus isn't a death sentence. It isn't something that has to completely alter their life course. I just think, you know, it's important for them to be aware. They might have to prepare and plan and pack differently than they first imagined because, you know, there's a new set of obstacles that are in play. But, you know, it is a journey, and their life is going, you know, to take a different course than maybe they originally planned. But they can see from all the stories in the book that no matter, you know, the hardships or the difficulties that these men and women have experienced, you know, they have great lives, and they've done so much, and they have fulfilling careers, they have family, they have children, you know, so it is possible.
Wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Okay. Well, actually, right now, the book is currently available on Amazon through Kindle. While you would have to purchase the book through Amazon, if someone doesn't have a Kindle to read it, they can just download the free Kindle app for their cell phone or their computer. And they can also learn more about lupus, its symptoms, the Lupus Foundation of America, my book. And I also have an ongoing lupus blog where I discuss, you know, many different aspects of the disease. And this is all found at my website and blog, which is lupussurvivalguide.com.
Wonderful. What advice can you give to someone who has just been diagnosed with lupus?
My advice for someone who is recently diagnosed would be to educate yourself as much as possible. Find someone that you can ask questions, whether it's an online forum or a support group. And I think I mentioned before, keeping a journal of your everyday life, symptoms, things you eat, things you do. I say this because many lupus patients, including myself, will tell you over time you will begin to see patterns. Maybe something you do or being out in the sun or experiencing a stressful situation can bring a symptom, you know, or a flare-up, even maybe something you eat. Just learning to be more aware of your body, it's so important. And also, if your body's telling you to rest, listen to it. You know, I ignored that for many years only to have my body brought to such a weakened state. You know, and so there's a time for rest. Like when I need to rest now, I shut off all electronics and I grab my earplugs and check out for a while. So that is my, you know, first tip of advice for someone that's just diagnosed with lupus.
Sometimes it takes situations like this to kind of bring you back to live your life in the present moment.
Absolutely. And that is something that I've learned, and I can honestly tell you only over the past couple of years has that been something that I've focused on. Mm-hmm. I think when you have a disease, and, you know, it doesn't have to be lupus, but when you have a disease that continually, you know, knocks you down or is progressive, and, you know, as time goes on, more and more things happen, it's very easy to get stuck in a mind frame of, what's going to happen to me tomorrow? Or is this going to get worse? And what if I can't work one day? And then you stop living in the present moment and you don't enjoy the times that you have right now, you know, when your friends are around, your family are there, or, you know, you're taking part maybe in a hobby that you enjoy, because your mind just goes to what's going to happen to me in the future. But, you know, we can't live like that. We lose today if we live like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for a caregiver of someone with lupus?
Absolutely. You know, being a caregiver is very rewarding, but can also be extremely stressful. Some tips that I would give would be accept help, get connected to other caregivers in your area. There's a lot of support groups. You can find them online. And then, you know, focus on what you can provide to that person. And, you know, if there are certain things you can't do, then, you know, make other arrangements for that. And don't feel guilty about asking for help. Also, I would tell caregivers to just be aware of what's known as a caregiver stress, which is feeling very overwhelmed and irritable, maybe sleeping a lot, losing interest in activities. Statistically, caregivers are more likely to experience stress or depression, so they have to be really aware of these signs that, you know, something isn't working. And this is where support groups or speaking to your physician, you know, comes into play when something like that, you know, starts happening or caregivers just start feeling like they can't handle it any longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know you've given us some websites address. Are there other resources that are readily available to help patients as well as caregivers alike?
Yes. Well, you have lupussurvivalguide.com, and then you also have lupusfl.org is great. That's for people that live in Florida, which is the chapter that I'm involved in for Lupus Foundation of America. Lupus.org is their national site, and there's some helplines. The National Information Request Line for Lupus Foundation of America is 1-800-558-0121.
Wonderful. How has writing Lupus Real-Life Patients Talk impacted you personally?
I would have to say that it's helped intensify my desire to just help others and to educate others. You know, receiving feedback from lupus patients who have read the book and hearing how thankful they were to be able to relate to someone, you know, maybe not all of the stories, but someone in that book helped them realize that they weren't alone. That made me so happy. So I'm actually considering taking that format and doing it for other diseases out there.
What was the toughest challenge in putting the book together?
I would think something I went back and forth with that was difficult for me was, you know, just from years in journalism, I would take someone's story and I would rewrite it. And I wouldn't change anything, but I'd have to rewrite it according to the terms of, you know, the magazine or the newspaper I was working for. But for this book, I was originally going to rewrite the story in more of like a chicken soup for the soul kind of way. Mm-hmm. But then I you know, realized as I was reading it in question and answer format that it was just so much more powerful just coming directly from them and not, you know, taking any parts out and not altering their answers in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that was a major decision for me later on because that is not how I planned to write the book, but I think it worked. So that was probably the most difficult.
Interesting concept, and I like it. It's pretty much real life, real situation, and you do want to hear from the people because they are speaking from the heart.
Exactly.
What was the rewarding side of the equation?
I think the ultimate reward is to know that you've helped someone. If I just had one person tell me, you know, that book helped me better understand what lupus is, helped me better understand, you know, what I can do on a daily basis to help myself, or just help me realize that there are other people out there who get this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's rewarding enough for the time spent writing that book.
Have you had any feedback from the people that have read your book so far?
I have. I've had many emails and, you know, messages through social media and phone calls. Just so happy, just so thankful to, you know, for those who were in the book, they're just so thankful to be able to share their story and just feel like, you know, finally, like the world is listening and lupus is getting out there. And they're just so excited because for many of them, when they were diagnosed, there was nothing like this. And then just also from lupus patients that, you know, are just happy to have someone that they can relate to.
Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
Currently, I'm working on a humorous and an inspirational memoir. It's my personal story of the accident. It really goes into detail about, you know, experiencing an accident as a pedestrian and then also working through the lupus diagnosis and discovering my faith. That book has more of a conversational tone, and I've tried to write in a very humorous manner because I want people just to enjoy it, and I want it to be just relatable to anyone, regardless if they have a chronic illness, you know, or were in a terrible accident. Everyone experiences a major life event at some point. So the tone of the book is, you know, how do we get through that and how do we survive and how do we thrive?
Fantastic. That sounds great. I mean, if there's one great antidote, panacea for life is humor.
That's what I'm concentrating on that book.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Sure. I have a couple of tips that I consider my recipe for living. And First is to be kind to yourself and never speak bad about yourself. You know, having a chronic illness that sometimes takes away your ability to do things can make it very easy for you to think about the things you can no longer do, or, you know, you get frustrated with yourself. And it took me so long to recognize what those thoughts do to our body in a physical manner. So speak good things to yourself and speak life into yourself on a daily basis. Even if that seems uncomfortable to you at first, you'll be amazed at the difference that, you know, it does as far as your mental and physical attitude and body. Also, just letting go of what you can't control, being mindful and focusing on the present, learning how to say no when the situation calls for it. And, you know, from my grandmother who raised me, and she was just such a calm, peaceful woman. She just constantly reminded me, you know, to be loving to yourself and to others and in everything you do. If we do things out of love for someone or something and we don't do it out of selfishness or something that we're hoping we get in return, you know, all of our experiences in life can change. We need faith and hope and love in our lives, and we need that regardless if we have a debilitating illness or not.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Marissa, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Susan Heim. She is the author of the latest Chicken Soup for the Soul book, Devotional Stories for Wives. Susan will be sharing stories of inspirations from 101 wives who use unique devotionals to further nurture their relationships. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Marissa, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny. I had a wonderful time. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.